Blog Talk Radio.
This is Monica Liel welcoming you to the LL Research radio program In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. Today is Friday, September 7th, 2012. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. Jim McCarty is Carla Ruckert's husband, the scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Please visit our websites, llresearch.org, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And the community website, bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4, th.org, featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. I'll be asking Carla and Jim questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. Or you can join the chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Monica Liel, and I'm talking with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty of LL Research. Carla and Jim, I understand you had a big bash at your house last weekend.
We did.
I can't wait to hear about it, and I know everybody else is too. You want to tell us a little bit about the homecoming this year?
Well, we have one every year, and I suppose for the last 7 years or so we've had them here. We tried having them away, and it didn't work out very well. So we really like to have them here and have 40 people in our backyard. Of course, our poor little bungalow is just bulging at the seams in the three bathrooms, including the outdoor porta potty, get hard use. But we make it every year, and it's funny how the magic works. You know, we don't say no to people. I mean, we don't know the people that come. And some are new every year. And we don't know who's going to talk or about what until they share it with us. They just ask for the time so we can schedule out the time. But at any rate, all of a sudden, the magic happens and people are having the most fun ever. And I think, you know, talking to people that are supporting them from the get-go, it's such an amazing experience to people that are pretty much considered different or odd or unusual. And then they come here and they're totally normal and totally supported by the others that are here. I'm saying of all ages and it doesn't matter. It runs across every possible boundary. And for the ones that like it, that's it, you know. And the other thing that we really try to do is pump up the volume on good food. It's so nice to have home cooked this and that. So we have volunteers that make, brownies and cookies. And the first time we eat, there's a great big feast that night. And lots of everything, and it's very good food. We had a wonderful cheesecake for dessert. Everybody had cheesecake, homemade cheesecake this year. And then the food is just available for breakfasts and lunches, the kind of food that you'd expect. You know, some beautiful soups for lunch and eggs and stuff for breakfast. But the main thing is just it builds because there are people talking and happy all the time. You know, Jim, am I catching it? Try to catch the feeling.
Oh, yeah, I think you're doing a great job. The people are from all over the country, and then we have usually a few foreign visitors as well. And they all have individual interests that center around the law of one, but they have different takes on it and different aspects that they want to talk about while they're here. So we get a very rich environment of people sharing what's near and dear to their hearts, and then there's always a question and answer period for every session, so that there's a real bond that's built up. And I think that after the regular talks are over, and you'd think, well, the evening is over, then there's people that stay up late into the night talking under the tent, and all kinds of information is exchanged there as well. So it's a real chance for people to share from their hearts and to know that they've got a safe place to share, that they've come to a place where people are really interested in what they have to say. So it's a very supportive environment and one that nourishes love and open-heartedness, and it's just a wonderful experience for everybody.
We even had two couples decide that they wanted to pursue life together.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Really? Looking at these young faces, you know. Oh, my God. Are you sure?
and they were already couples when they came, but they just made that commitment when they were there?
No, they became couples here last year. And
they
came
became?
Back this year.
Oh, my God, that's wild.
Yeah, we don't try to be matchmakers, but it just sort of happened with these two couples.
That's so funny. So am I understanding correctly that it's basically each person has an opportunity to talk about whatever they want, but it's, you know, a spiritual topic,
right.
Somewhat loosely pertaining to the law of one? Is that right? Or
right. And not everybody presents. Not everybody feels comfortable right away doing that, but about half the people do, and they get either half hour, 45 minutes, or in some cases an hour, depending upon how long they think their topic is going to take. So it takes up the time that way, and just it works out very well.
We have lots of meditation time, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before and after, and break it up.
So there's not a one person, like, teaching the whole thing. It's more of a group.
No, I've done that before, and people have been enormously supportive of that. But it seems to me that this is more fun. I'm not sure.
We did make a presentation. Carl and I talked about our experience over the last couple of years with her recovery from back surgeries, and the catalyst of that is presented to us, and then how we've worked through it. We try to relate it to the various energy centers to see exactly, well, you know, what energies were in motion, and so that was our presentation. We began the sessions with that presentation here in the house, and we were filmed, and they could see us and hear us out under the tent. And then we also concluded by having a question-and-answer session on the last day, the last session.
Okay. Is any of that video footage going to be made available to the public?
No, I don't think so. It's never been successfully moved from any camera to any public. As many times people film it, it's a lot of work to edit something. It really is. You have to be. You know, it'll take another year. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Everything is transcribed, though, and I believe that's available. Funny thing, the last session from last year's homecoming was transcribed and sent in to Gary the day before this homecoming started. So it takes a while to get that done.
Got it in.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I'm glad you all had a great time. That's great.
Yeah,
everything
we sure
went smoothly. Okay. Okay. All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about before I move on to the opening riff?
So let's dive into the opening riff.
Okay. This is from session 76.15 from the raw material. Questioner, then we have a third density that is, comparatively speaking, the twinkling of an eye, the snap of a finger in time compared to the others. Why is the third density cycled so extremely rapidly compared to the first and second? I am Ra. The third density is a choice. Questioner, third density, then, compared to the rest of the densities, all of them, is nothing but a uniquely short period of what we consider to be time and is for the purpose of this choice. Is this correct? I am Ra. This is precisely correct. The prelude to choice must encompass the laying of the foundation, the establishment of the illusion, and the viability of that which can be made spiritually viable. The remainder of the densities is continuous refining of the choice. This also is greatly lengthened, as you would use the term. The choice is, as you put it, the work of a moment, but is the axis upon which the creation turns.
Thanks. There it is, folks. It's very simple. Ra says it out. It's very straight. The third density is a choice. And you said, well, now, which choice would that be? Okay. Let's look at what Ra says about the prelude to choice. The prelude to choice must encompass the laying of the foundation. Okay, let's look at that. What would be a metaphysical foundation? That would be you. Being aware and attentive to and knowledgeable of yourself. Knowing yourself, accepting yourself. Somewhere in that line from knowing yourself toward accepting yourself, you begin to make a metaphysical footprint. You begin to have some metaphysical weight. You have to know who you are. And who you are, in metaphysical terms, is made up of whose you are, how you structure your deepest and most necessary beliefs. I structure mine as a mystical Christian that works as closely as possible with white Western ritual magic. I see myself as a priestess or a servant in the Creator's house. I set my intention every morning to serve. And my husband and I together do the banishing ritual of the lesser pentagram to cleanse the place of dwelling, so that everything in our little creation is sacred. Sacred and cleansed. And it feels really good. It feels peaceful to have that base or plinth, as Ra would call it later, the base of the statue. It feels archetypical to be able to know who you are. Who are you? I am a child of the Creator. I am an heir through hope of the Creator itself. I am made up of the Creator stuff, which is love. That is a basis that will hold you in not only this moment, but in general. So, the establishment of the illusion comes after the laying of the foundation. The prelude to choice must encompass the laying of the foundation, the establishment of the illusion. Okay, let's think about the illusion. That's what we see out of our five senses. And that's the beginning of what we see out of our five senses. Almost always, when we see something, we characterize it. We judge it. We categorize it. We sort it. That is what people do because there's too much to see. I have heard tell from scientists that when we're looking at a picture or when we're looking at a scene, we're seeing very little of it. We're seeing the other people's faces, if there are faces, and usually not much more than that, because the most important thing we have learned since babyhood in a picture is going to be the face of the person talking to us, and consequently that's where we look first. It's just sheer learning. You know, it's the baby learns how to do this so that the baby can figure out what mom wants. Okay. So, we have an illusion, and we can establish it the way we wish it. We can basically make of our illusion what we want. But we just need to want it and to make it that way all the time. If you say cooking is a sacred act, then it does not behoove you to toss the burnt pan out the window and beat up the floor with your spatula. Although people do it. There's always bad behavior. But basically, the image in such an establishment of illusion is that you're establishing an illusion that is alive so that you can interact with it and be one with it. And he says, that the last thing, the viability of that which can be made spiritually viable. To be viable is to be able to live. So if there are elements in your mind which seem to you beyond the pale and are on the shadow side and you cannot possibly imagine wanting to act them out in your life, for instance, a murder, then you don't go for that. That's not spiritually viable. That has to go. But you have to lay the foundation, establish the illusion as you see it, naming that which can be spiritually viable and calling it to you. And moving forward in this school of souls along those lines. In order to work with the higher chakras, you really have to have this metaphysical footprint. The laying of the foundation is everything. Who am I is the first and last question. And it never gets old. Mickey, I'd really appreciate your thoughts on this.
Well, I think after that, this has been done, then we set about pursuing the pre-incarnational choices that we have made. Those choices are made with all of this previous material as a given. And within the framework, then, of the illusion that has been established and the attempt to know yourself, you begin to pursue those particular lessons that you have brought with you into the incarnation. And you pursue them from the aspect of what is spiritually viable. What can you learn of a spiritual nature from the various activities and thoughts and actions that comprise your daily round of activities? You look at the world, or you continue to increase your ability to look at the world as a spiritual entity and the world around you as a spiritual event, so that everything that you do then eventually becomes a sacred act. It becomes your interaction with the Creator, whether you're talking with family or friends or strangers or working in your yard or driving on the interstate. All of this becomes a spiritual event, an experience that has a treasure for you, if you will look for it. Everywhere you see the Creator, eventually, when you have pursued your pre-incarnational lessons many times and have deepened your understanding of each one, and you begin to see that there is a rhythm to your life, and it is a sacred song that is sung within your soul, and it reverberates throughout all your experiences so that you are a spiritual being interacting with the one Creator, and you begin to see the Creator in yourself as well. Now, this is the ideal way that the incarnation would go. It sometimes hits bumps in the road, and you don't find such an easy way of discovering the spiritual side of things, and I guess you could say that that trauma sometimes is a way of getting through the outer shell of the vision or the self that maybe doesn't want to interact in the spiritual way, wants to be separate in some way and wants to be other than or better than. So that if we veer from that which we have planned for ourselves. We also seem to have planned ways of getting ourselves back on track, and some of those are a little bit on the traumatic side, having to learn lessons the hard way, having to suffer more. And this suffering, though, brings you back to the center of yourself, where you can discover that you are a spiritual being, and that everybody that you see in your activities is also a spiritual being. So this is a way that the incarnation becomes your pathway to the Creator, and not just a pathway, but you can discover that in every moment you are with the Creator, and the Creator is with you.
Yeah, that's wonderful, Mickey.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of follow-up questions. The first one is, so spiritually viable, that kind of presupposes that you've made the choice as far as STO versus STS?
Yes.
Okay. And the second question is, you mentioned finding yourself and that being the path to the Creator in, you know, within yourself, and then sometimes the trauma. I'm not saying it as good as you did, Jim, but the trauma, you know, being the vehicle to get to there, to that point. Could you comment a little bit on maybe giving some advice to people who are lonely, who are seeking love and companionship and maybe haven't found that, and how do they find that love and that love of the Creator in themselves, especially if they've been betrayed and abandoned by other people?
Which is often the case. I remember a question being asked quite some time ago, and I noted the answer because the person asking was a friend of mine, as opposed to somebody, a new friend that I just met that day. You know, it's an old established friend, and I knew that there was a lot behind that question, a lot of years of loneliness. And what they said was to get to know yourself, to fall in love with yourself, to have an absolute fit over yourself, and start having fun with yourself. And keep your eyes on the path beside you, and one of these days, the feet on the path beside you. There may be some feet on the path beside you that become your true love. That was a beautiful moment for the person that needed that. And it did happen eventually that this person had found all kinds of love, and believe he's settling down with his true love. That's an example that turned out well. There are lots of times it turns out poorly. I think that when you stop thinking about what other people are doing and stop thinking about I'm lonely, and you start going, well, let's see, what do I feel like doing today? You know, I really feel like I could give some of myself. Maybe I could volunteer. You know, maybe I could, I like to read. Maybe I could read for the blind. Or, you know, there are like six people that I know of in this old folks home near me that don't have any people anymore. I could visit them. It's amazing how many good things there are to get involved with, that not necessarily aiming at giving you friends, but Habitat, you know, where they're building homes for the homeless, even the soup kitchen at your local soup kitchen, whatever that structure of giving is. There are wonderful ways to share your time. I know you can share your time here locally at the local cool station, WFPK, and volunteers get, you know, free tickets to stuff and get to be part of the station. And so there's all kinds of stuff. If you can get together enough to just step out without anybody asking you and do something all on your own, it really is to be recommended, because if you're busy doing something, even if it's just picking up a phone and calling somebody you haven't called in a long time. You know, what's happening with them? How are they doing? Involving yourself from yourself outward instead of looking around for somebody to help you inwardly, outwardly to inwardly, is really going to come. It's going to come back on you, because the more you're out there, going to church, volunteering, doing your thing, the more chances you have to meet other people that are also out there for all kinds of good reasons. Monica or Jim, please, I'm pretty naive on this.
Oh, no, that was excellent. Jim, do you have anything to add?
No, I would underscore what Carla has to say. If you feel like you're an alone type of person, sometimes it just takes a change in your own attitude and the way you look at yourself. Look at yourself more as somebody who is ready to go out and interact, ready to give when you feel like you need others to give to you. Well, begin by giving to them. I think it's probably one of the New Age sayings that popped up somewhere in the 60s, be the change you wish to see in the world. It really involves just changing your point of view. It's, you know, so many times in our lives we discover that we want to do something differently. We want to change our diet. We want to eat better, more healthy, and we want to exercise more. We want to be healthier. So we have to change our point of view of ourselves, and it begins with ourselves. We really have the power to do whatever we want to do. The key is really wanting to do something. So when you make this choice, the original choice, it's like Ross said, when making this our choice, a service to others, a service to self, every time we make that choice, it builds upon itself, and it redoubles the power of the choice. So the same thing with any particular kind of choice in our lives. If we want to be with other people of like mind, then we need to go out, and we need to look, we need to seek them, and we can find these things. The whole thing though is wanting to do it and taking action.
So in terms of someone who's lonely and seeking their mate, then instead of seeking outward, then really accentuate the choice they've made, which is the STO path, and give of themselves rather than trying to find someone to make them happy. That seems to be what
That's
you're saying.
That's the idea, but it just seems it seems that it seems not to be a slur to say, well, just, you know, have fun being yourself. But, you know, that's the beginning of it. The beginning of it is, I remember one time I was feeling a little bit down, and it occurred to me, you know, you never put anything on the stereo these days. So I put one of my favorite records on the stereo and got the atmosphere going. And all of a sudden, my mood had changed 100%. You know, I was bopping along to the music. I think that is typical. You know, it's like, you know, you can help yourself out in just the most simple ways to feel good about yourself and not to feel lonely. And then, you know, I have never in my life sought companionship. It has never occurred to me to pick up the phone. So I really am not very good at talking to people that are lonely. I've never been lonely because I have fun with myself. I've got a crazy mind, a stupid sense of humor, but I find humor in almost everything. I go through life roaring with laughter inside.
Oh, wow.
So,
that's great.
You know, it's just, I do think that it's almost magical. If you're having fun all by yourself, that attracts those who want to be like you, or those who you know, catch your vibe when you're out there. You know, just get out there, buy a ticket to the whatever.
Okay, now that prompted another question for me. Then how do you differentiate between this falling in love with yourself and really enjoying yourself from an STO perspective, as opposed to someone who is choosing STS and just, you know, self-serving?
Well, if you're falling in love with yourself, and then you do something that is only good for you, then you've gone down the STS path. You know, if your behavior, if your behavior doesn't reflect a service to others attitude, if you're not pleasant, then people learn to avoid you, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think the falling in love with yourself is something that, you know, we all have alone time, and that's something that you do when you're alone and you're contemplating the meaning of life, your part in it, what you want to do, who you are, and how you do things. And then that gives you a richer feeling for other people as well. It gives you an ability to identify with them so that when you are with other people, then it's more natural and easy to be of service to them. So it's a service to others preparation, you might say. It's a way of getting yourself fully imbued with your love of life and your love of people so that when you go out and you're with them, then you're seen as a person who really does like being with them and likes to share life with them and likes to just have a good time and maybe likes to talk about higher principles and discuss philosophy or whatever. It's really a way of, again, laying this foundation within yourself so that you can build upon it with other people.
While being genuinely interested in their well-being and serving them and not just using them to make you happy.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. I mean, look at all the huge numbers of people that we have at L&L Research that have volunteered to do different things that I would never have thought of. I would never have thought of a radio station, you know, a radio show until you and Gary cooked it up. Monica.
Actually, Gary took the credit for that. Gary, that was all Gary.
No. That was brilliant. And which he is, of course. And, you know, I mean, there are lots of things that, you know, even you look at the people that are transcribing for us and people that have a prison ministry and are helping people that are incarcerated. Just all kinds of different things within one big barn. And it's all service to others. It's all love. I think you feel the service to others vibe if it's service to others. If you're trying to get with somebody just so that you can, you know, be of service to somebody, it's a little frantic. You know, you just wait, and then somebody will ask you for something, and then you're of service to them. You don't have to hustle around looking for it. Listen for it. It'll come.
Okay, I'm going to move to our first question, which kind of flows into that, actually. This is from Nathan. I showed my girlfriend the Law of One, and after reading it, she identified with the STS path. Right after that, I found out she was a sociopath. Am I responsible? Was she already a sociopath, or is it my fault? How do I recognize STS entities in the future, and how do I serve them without violating their free will? How do you love someone who doesn't want love? Should I be more careful who I share the books with? Is the Law of One dangerous in the wrong hands? Thank you.
First of all, no. Nathan, you did not cause your girlfriend to become STS or a sociopath. No, no, no. Not your fault. Things like that take a long time to take root. Imagine she has a childhood history, which if she told you, would set your hair on end and the path that she led. Mickey, how do you recognize service to self entities? I don't have a quick answer.
Well, actually, maybe I'm naive, but I can't really see many service to self entities that I've come across in my life.
Encyclopedia salesman?
Yeah, well, probably not. He's just trying to make a living. As far as, you know, it's a lot more dangerous, I think all this did was become a mirror for the girlfriend so that she could see and you could see her truer nature. And in that respect, then it helps you each to go your path and wish each other well, or at least you can wish her well. I'm not sure if she will wish you well, but then, you know, that's up to her. I think that any type of experience that you share with another person, whether it's, you know, the writings of the Ra or any other philosophical book or whatever, can become a vehicle that reveals to you and to the other person more of the inner self and the workings of the inner self. And I think that's a good thing, because the more we know about ourselves, the more we can pursue that incarnational lesson or a series of lessons that we've come here to learn. And in that respect, it's a good thing. It might mean that you you have a parting of the ways, but then that might be a good thing as well, because you probably wouldn't get along that well after a while, and it would become apparent that there was something drastically different in your personalities that was not going to allow you to harmonize as a couple. So I think things like this do work out well eventually. We just have to be patient and wait for the outcome to become apparent to us.
And the question, how do you love someone who doesn't want love? Well, from a very comfortable, safe distance. It's okay to love somebody. You don't have to be close to them. You don't have to bug them or bother them. You can just love them enough to let them go. As for being more careful who you share the books with, I wouldn't worry about it. People are either drawn to them or they just aren't. It doesn't seem to be any gray area. So I'd say just offer books if you feel to, and don't be surprised either way if they say yes or no.
So if we offer the books to someone and they're going to take out of it what is appropriate for them, what they resonate with, and if that be that STS or STO, it's not our responsibility because we offered it to them.
No, it's the only responsibility we had was in making it possible for that person to have a better insight into what he's actually doing. And he called himself, or she called herself, for what she was, STS. She wasn't ashamed of it. Which has to
okay.
go along with the service to self-path. You can't be ashamed of yourself. It works against you.
Okay, I'm going to move to the next question from Nina. Nina says, I have just finished reading the Ra materials, and I would like to personally thank you for allowing me to work towards the path of finding my own truth. I've always been someone who is spiritual, but lacked the knowledge on how to strengthen my spirituality. The question I have for you is very confusing, because I think of myself as very analytical, always striving for perfection individual. Meditation is my biggest challenge because clearing my mind seems to be a big challenge. There have been times when I felt the power of meditation and I've heard and seen a lot of positivity and encouraging words, but I often wonder if those words are someone else's because it seems to be male to me. Also, I feel like I have some sort of blockage in my heart that is not allowing me to fully accept and love myself, which would then allow me to accept and love others. I have a lot of fears that I'm slowly working through, and I would like to know how to not be so afraid. I've had problems with anxiety because I often feel, hear, and see things that a professional would consider to be schizoaffective behavior. I know I am different. I feel different. I'm just having trouble finding a balance between moments of sorrow and moments of happiness. I love the world too much, and I'm too compassionate. This allows me to tolerate a lot of abuse, and I'm confused and would like to know how I can love myself without feeling like a selfish person. I apologize for the unorganization of my questions, but if you can point me in the right direction, I will be forever grateful. Reading your other publications has given me a sense of joy. I understand now that I can lead a normal life that does not require solitude, but I often feel myself withdrawing from the world because of how vulnerable I am to negativity. I hope your health continues to progress so that you may continue spreading your joy onto every life you touch. Regards, Nina.
That is so sweet. Let's see. Let me talk first about meditation. I think that people that are used to a lot of schooling, and gone on to college, and worked their minds some, and you know, done papers and all that stuff. It's sort of, you can read this as a book, you know, you can read it in your head. I mean, it's not any less powerful because it's in your head. It remains in your head, and the question is, how do you get it seated in your heart? So you try to meditate, because meditation is the obvious way to do it. It's the universal sort of solvent for linear thinking. So you try, and yet your mind is very active. Well, that's typical, and it doesn't really matter, because the intention that you have sitting down to meditate and sticking with it for however long that you wanted to stick with it, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, you know, 15 at a time, sit there and attempt at least to let the thoughts come and let them go without following them, without thinking, oh gosh, I got to write that down. Let them come, let them go. And that may be all that you do the whole time, but still, you were really, really trying for that whole 11 minutes or whatever it was to be still and let be empty so that the Creator can fill you up. So just keep at it. There is a known physiological difference that takes place when people meditate a couple of times a day for about 20 minutes. There's nothing woo-woo or New Age about it, really. It's just a known fact. It helps keep your blood pressure down. It gives you longer life. It makes you feel better. I would suggest that you try that. Now, there's something else here, too. You have a blockage in your heart that doesn't allow you to love yourself. You have a lot of fears, and you don't know how not to be afraid. I have had problems with anxiety because I feel things a professional would consider to be schizoaffective. Okay. I don't know exactly what that means. I know that schizoid means, you know, that there are two personalities. Schizoaffective must mean that you act as though there are two personalities, or it would seem that there may be odd kind of usage. But anyway, we'll skip that part. I'm not really good with people that are having visions or having things happen to them, because all I can do is tell you what I do when I get something from the inner realms or the unseen realms that I didn't ask for. I ask that to leave. And then I tell it to leave in the name of Jesus the Christ. And if it continues, I just tell them I'm not going to pay attention, and I don't. I don't listen. All I did is don't pay any attention, don't listen. I don't know if that would work for somebody else. That's what I've done when I've had unusual experiences. And I was in therapy for a while after Don Elkins died. It was very tough on me. And the psychiatrist decided that I was neurotic but well compensated. I thought I was really glad to be well compensated. It doesn't matter how neurotic you are if you can possibly be well compensated, right? She just didn't know what to do with me. She basically said I was eccentric. And Jim, what would you say in addition to what I said that would steer her towards that sense of joy that we feel so easily?
Well, I would suggest just starting where she is with her desire to meditate, her desire to read and to learn, and her intentions. Give yourself credit for having these desires and these intentions, and realize that they're part of a spiritual being that's beginning to unfold like a flower bud. And you're seeking the sun. You're seeking to stare into the face of the Creator, to be nourished. And look at yourself as a child of the Creator and someone that wishes to be of service, wishes to know more of the self and more of the Creator. And give yourself credit for that. That's something that is very precious, and so many people don't have that. They might be successful in all different kinds of things they do, in earning money and acquiring social status and material goods, and maybe even a seeming circle of friends. But so many people don't have that core of desire to learn, to grow, to be a universal being, to accept others, to love others. And those are precious treasures that we need to give value to in ourselves for having them, and to appreciate ourselves for being this type of a person, for being a spiritual seeker. Sometimes we have these treasures and we don't really give ourselves credit for having them and for being a good person that wants to be of service. So start in what you might say is a small way, and continue to expand your intentions and your activities and your reading and your service. And soon you'll discover that you're an infinite being with a great deal of power to direct your own life and to affect, in a positive sense, the lives of others around you.
Now, one of the things in Nina's questions, she mentioned being too compassionate. Is it possible to be too compassionate? How do you know if you're too compassionate?
Well, I think if you find yourself being utterly miserable because you've got 37 cats, you know, you've gone over the line. If you're utterly miserable because you take everything as a, you know, that would normally be abuse, and decide, well, I'll just, you know, take that on the chin, and that way I'll preserve the peace. That's not smart. Don't do that. I think a lot of times a good feeling of, you know, rattling on happily has to do with setting boundaries. There doesn't have to be anything rude or confusing or deep about setting a boundary if two people can't agree to disagree. If that other person is always coming in and in invading your space, there's a point at which you say no more. And you say, look, you know, I'll do anything I can for you. I support you. You're a good person. You're my friend, you know. But you can't be doing this to me. I think maybe I'll move away from you a little bit and not see you quite so often. Why do I want to give myself punishment? And you just, you know, you simply make boundaries. And you can make them actually in your mind without doing too much moving around physically, if you want.
I think you touched upon that topic previously in another show about the difference between giving of yourself selflessly versus being abused. And I think, if I remember correctly, you said the difference was, are you choosing it? Are you choosing to give to that person, or are you putting up with them imposing something on you? And then, of course, that would be abuse.
And some people might not see it as abuse. Some people might think you're just being selfish. But you cannot help the way you feel. And if in all truth that's the way you feel, you need to act on it, in spite of the fact that it might not be. I mean, there are some people that you just don't want to be around after you get to know them. And you'll get up and move to avoid, you know, a long conversation. And you know, that is, or that person earned it over a period of time when he did things that were not acceptable to you. You know, to be a person that loves is not automatically become a martyr or a doormat. To be a person that loves, you know, you're loving that which is strong in the other person, which is good in the other person. And if that person is just dumping on you all the time, you're having a little trouble, you know, in the distance between the ideal and where that person is just too great, and you can't find anything to appreciate, you know. And at that point, you know, you move away slowly, but not in anger, just for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that really does help to clarify it. And we're almost out of time, so just a couple of quick follow-up questions. If someone genuinely cares about another person, do you think they would be naturally able to show that? I mean, can you tell if somebody genuinely cares or loves you? Or do you think that someone could genuinely care about someone and yet have some blockages and not be able to express it? Or do you think they would be able to find some way of expressing it if they really did care?
I think there are some tragic relationships in which the connection is never made. They made a movie about a British pair in service, a butler and a housekeeper. Not remembering Ralph with the funny last name.
Fine.
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes. Anyway, I may be mixing up two movies. At any rate, all she wanted him to say was that he wanted her there. And he wouldn't do it. He said that, you know, the madam will appreciate your staying on. You know, very cold. But he adored her. And, you know, you could see in the follow-up to that shot that, you know, he was saying it, you know, with tension and everything, you know, hoping that she'd stay. And he was heartbroken when she didn't. But there was not enough bravery there for one of them to reach out and say, I love you. Please love me, too. Mickey, why don't you attack that one?
Well, I think most of the time people are able to show in some way that they do care about another person. And usually you just need a little bit of an indication that somebody, you know, cares about you. If you care about them as well, then that kind of builds on itself. And that's the natural way of attraction between people. And I think for the great majority of people, it works. And there may be some sort of a blockage that makes it difficult to express in words. Some people may have an easier way of expressing in actions, but I think that most of the time our caring does come across to the person for whom we care, and it helps give us an avenue for further enlarging upon our ability to love and to open our hearts. Most of it is just really wanting to be able to express and wanting to share that caring with another person. And I think most of the time that there's enough of a way of expressing it that it can work, and it will work. We just keep the door open, and actually keep the heart open.
Yeah, what made me ask that question was we were talking about someone that's being abused and needing to draw some boundaries, and I was wondering if the person who is being abusive. It seems to me that, you know, sometimes it may be a mixed bag. You know, they're being abusive and they do care, or maybe they really don't care, you know, so how can a person know the difference? But I think you've answered it about this. I guess it depends. It can vary. Okay. Well, I think we are just about out of time. We've got maybe 2 minutes left, and there's one last quick question. From Wanderman says, hi, Carla, hope you're doing well. What would you say you think about the most as you do? What is it? Okay, as you go throughout your day. What would you say you think about the most as you go out throughout your day? This is from Wonder Man.
Well, at the end of a long life, I can honestly say that I think the most about the Creator when I go through my day, because I have instilled the Creator into everything that I see, and I can love everything that I see and feel totally a part of a beautiful moment in a picture. And it's almost, sometimes it's a still life. The moment lasts so long, and it's just so beautiful. And that's where I start.
Okay. How about you, Jim? We're going to ask you, too.
Well, I see the Creator in Carla, and I see a child of the Creator there that I really enjoy being with and helping however I can and talking with and just hanging out together. We begin and end our days with pretty much just hanging out and enjoying each other's company and a little quiet conversation. And it's a simple but rewarding type of life.
Sounds beautiful. You guys are both just beautiful. I think it's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You too.
Well, I just love hearing about your beautiful relationship. I just think that's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you once again. It's always an honor to be doing this show with you and Carla and Jim. All right. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert and Jim McCarty. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit the two websites, llresearch.org, which is the archive website featuring the Law of One material, 1,500 channeling transcripts, publications, interviews, speeches, and more, and LL Research's community website, bringforth.org. That's bring, the number 4th.org. Thanks so much for listening in. Special thank you to those who submitted questions. We are soliciting questions for next week's show. Please go to bringforth.org, go to the Bring Forth 2 forum, and post to the thread discussion/Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert submitting questions. We would really like to have some questions for next week, or better yet, call in. We always welcome live phone calls. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and that is Friday, September 14th. Have a great week.